It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Live from Everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Hey, it's actually Jason Chaffetz filling in for Jimmy today. Jimmy has been on an airplane. He's headed to Nashville, Tennessee, where Fox Nation is going to host a very important award show. And, it's the Patriot Awards. People who actually, ordinary Americans who do extraordinary things. Shouldn't we honor them? I'm so glad that Fox does this. It's on Fox Nation. Jimmy's part of that whole production. So he's on an airplane. We may catch him at the end of the show if we get lucky if that plane's on time. But in the meantime, he asked me to fill in for him. I'm honored to do so, thrilled to do it. And boy, there's a lot to talk about. I'm not really worried about finding content for today's show because, oh my goodness, there's so much to talk about. We're going to kick things off. We got a lot of good guests coming on today. The producers and whatnot of the show did a good job lining people up. We're going to start with the congressman from Texas's 4th Congressional District. Pat Fallon is here joining us. Congressman, thanks for joining us.
Jason, thanks for having me on. You are a great American, and I've always been a big fan.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I really do appreciate it. All right, we want to kind of go around the horn and talk about a few different things. Congress actually passed a funding bill to get through the next little bit into January. Did you vote for that bill or against that bill?
No, Jason, I didn't vote for it. It's one of those issues, and I'm sure you had these instances when you came up in Congress,
yeah, yeah.
Where you can see both sides. I can see both sides in so much as we have a brand new speaker, and Mike Johnson is a bundle of intellect. He's a bundle of knowledge and energy and talent. And promise, quite frankly. And I think we needed that hard reset. I want him to get the runway that he needs because you never got to serve under a very conservative speaker like he is. So I'm excited about that prospect. So I can see why people would vote yes. For me personally, being from a border state, although I think Joe Biden made every state a border state, I needed to have border security provisions in it and having better leverage with the Senate. And that's why ultimately I couldn't support it, but I was close to, and I understand why people would.
I can see both sides too. I think you said that very well. We need a runway. Gettman guy's only been there 2 weeks. He's an exceptional human being, and I'm thrilled that was the ultimate selection for me personally. But I can see where it's got to be so frustrating to watch what's happening in the border, which is totally avoidable. How do you explain to somebody who's maybe not from Texas or Arizona, California, or New Mexico, who does, we hear all this complaining from New York and Chicago. Oh, look at all these people here. I know we're sanctuary states and we're sanctuary cities, but we can't handle this. We got to have all this money. It's a fraction of what's going on in Texas.
Well, you said it very adroitly, Jason. And let's take, for instance, Eric Adams up in New York City. He would always sing the praises of the sanctuary city's policies until it landed on his front door. And there, at the time he made these comments, there were 110,000 illegal migrants in New York City. And lo and behold, he said that was going to cost them $12 billion. $12 billion to handle 110,000 folks. So using Eric Adams' math, it'll cost the state of Texas $250 billion.
Wow.
This is an issue. And if you truly believe it's sanctuary cities and sanctuary states, then you personally should take in migrants into your home, not expect someone else to do it. And then suddenly that support would evaporate, as you see in these liberal cities. So I'm of the opinion that in Texas and in the other border states, you should put the migrants on buses and bus them right up to the White House, bus them right to Kamala Harris's residence, Joe Biden's mansion in Delaware, and Chuck Schumer's house, and wherever Hakeem Jeffries lives, and see how they like it, because it is unsustainable. We had never had a month in our history, Jason, of over 200,000 illegal border crossings. We've had 16 under Joe Biden, and heck, we even cracked the 300,000 mark a couple of months ago.
Those are crazy big numbers. I mean, they're absolutely stunning how big and how pervasive this problem is. We talk a lot about it, but you know, there's no solving it because I don't think they want to solve it. I think this is what they asked for. I think this is wanted, and this is what they're getting, and it's just sad. All right, we're talking to Pat Fallon, the congressman out of Texas. I want to transition because there is a very important meeting between the President of the United States and President Xi of China. And, you know, going into these types of meetings, the question is usually, well, what are you trying to accomplish? What is the president going to bring up and not bring up? I want you to listen to John Kirby. He was on Air Force One, so the audio is a little rough. But the three things that Biden will focus on with his meeting with President Xi, listen to cut two.
He'll be focusing really on three things. One, not only improve and increase American investment in the region, but the region's investment in the United States. Number two, lifting up and looking towards a vision for better international worker standards, cleaner environments, safer environments, collective bargaining, chance for international workers to be able to compete on a level playing field. And number three, building a more inclusive economy across the region.
Wow. Would that be your top three?
Jason, that is absolute word vomit drivel, man. Are you kidding me? So this would be my top three. Number one, hey, President Xi, why are you allowing, because you know everything that's going on in China, why are all these precursors for fentanyl being ferried to Mexico and then into our country, murdering 80,000 or killing 80,000 of our citizens every year? That's asymmetrical warfare, and I won't stand for it. How about trade? How about actual fair trade? We have a massive trade deficit with you when we want access to your markets. And then stop rattling your saber with Taiwan. How about that? And why do you want to build up your nuclear triad so much? And, you know, threatening the balance and the security of the country, of the region and the world at large. I don't know. That's the things I would talk about.
Well, he has on this list, if you know, I have the text of what he said just there. Number one on the list, not only improve and increase American investment in the region, but the region's investment in how are we going to send more money to China? That's number one on the President Biden's list of things. He's not going to talk about maybe, oh, the Wuhan labs. Maybe we could talk, you're right, about Taiwan. Maybe we could talk about fentanyl. Maybe we could talk about, I mean, would you put, that wouldn't even be on my top 20. How can America spend more money in China?
It wouldn't be in my top 1,000 either. I mean, but it shows, you know, not to oversimplify things, but President Trump, what was his motto? Put America first. And every country, I would expect every nation state to want to advocate for their interests first. And it's amazing that the American left doesn't do that. They think of all these other odd things to talk about because at the end of the day, they don't believe America is a force for good in the world. And that's why when Obama ran in 08, he was talking about we need to fundamentally change America. I'm sorry. What did you say? The most successful country history's ever known, and you want to fundamentally change it? Why? Right. It's because that's really their core beliefs.
Well, and what's interesting here, too, is I want to play cut one, which is Joe Biden himself. It has been an embarrassment, I think, to the United States of America that the president should be able to get anybody he wants on the phone at any given time. Everybody should take that call. But the snubs from the leaders in China to the leaders in the United States of America, we just kind of put our tail between our legs. And it's an embarrassment that they have to try to figure out how to communicate. Listen to what President Biden just said about this topic. Cut one.
How would you define success with your meeting with President Xi?
To get back on a normal course of corresponding, being able to pick up a phone and talk to one another if there's a crisis, being able to make sure our military still have contact with one another. We can't take, as I told you, we're not trying to decouple from China. But what we're trying to do is change the relationship for the better.
Congressman, you're on Armed Services. How do you read this comment? That would be the biggest success with President Xi is if, oh, we could actually start talking to each other.
I mean, that was hard to listen to, not only just the syntax, but it didn't make much sense, Jason. He said that he took a hard line when he talked at the State of the Union. He mentioned that he talks tough to Xi. He never even mentioned fentanyl. So how can you talk tough when you're not talking about the real issues and about the trade imbalance and about Xi is consolidating power unlike any Chinese leader other really than Mao. And then their constant saber rattling in the region. What about the man-made islands off the coast of the Philippines? you know, the nine dash line, claiming international waters well beyond, way beyond, you know, what it would normally be recognized. Those are the kinds of things that we need to be talking about with Xi. And yeah, I'd love to have normalized relations, but it's about behavior. It has to be behavior based first.
You know, we talk a lot about this idea that our allies, they don't respect us, and our enemies don't fear us. And it is embarrassing that the President of the United States has to say their number one goal is to just be able to communicate. If you're some third world country, I would think that would be your goal with the United States or somebody else. But we're not acting like the world superpower. The attitude and the approach is just so different than President Trump, and so different from actually being a leader.
Well, you know what? I want my presidents of the United States to have a bit of bravado. That's not a bad thing, because they should. They are the leader of the free world and the largest and strongest country, again, history has ever known. I asked President Trump directly, Jason, you'll love this. Why? I said, Mr. President, I noticed something, that in 2014, Vladimir Putin invaded Crimea. And then in under even George W. Bush, he took two provinces from Georgia. And then, of course, full-scale invasion under Biden. But nothing under you for 4 years. Why do you think that is? And, you know, he said very directly, I told Putin that I'd come right for him if I had to do that. I don't want to do it, Vlad. Don't make me do it. And then he jokes that I think he believed me like 5%, Pat, 5%. But he said if he had invaded Ukraine under my watch, I would have unleashed the American energy sector to such a degree that would have dropped the – because oil and, you know, natural gas are global commodities. It would have dropped it to such a degree where Vladimir Putin couldn't even fund his war. Now, that's a very good answer to a good question. And I think Putin knew that. And that's why he never acted up while President Trump was in office.
Oh, absolutely. I think they feared President Trump. And the other one that we should have learned a lot from was President Reagan. He was the wild cowboy. They weren't quite sure how to deal with him. And yet, you look back in my lifetime, the safest parts of our lives were under President Trump and President Reagan. And there's a reason for that. Congressman Pat Fallon from the great state of Texas in the 4th Congressional District. Congressman, thanks for joining us on Fox Across America. Appreciate it.
Jason, thank you. Keep doing the great work, and anytime.
Very good. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the most addictive show on the radio.
This is crack, rock cocaine. It isn't glamorous or cool or kid stuff.
This is Fox Across America with Jimmy Fallon. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
Hey, it's Jason Chaffetz. I'm filling in for Jimmy today, and boy, we have a lot of craziness that's going on in the world, and there's so much to talk about. But we got another member of Congress who's joining us. He's from Pennsylvania's 9th Congressional District. Anybody can guess what that is? Dan Muser. Dan's with us. Congressman, thanks for joining us on Fox Across America.
Jason, great to be with you. Appreciate it. How are you?
Good. Fired up, because there's a lot of, you know, there's always somebody doing something stupid somewhere. I can tell you that. Now, I am really excited about this bill that you introduced, because, you know, if you really look at everything that is going on in the Middle East that is nefarious, bad, subversive, it all funnels back to Iran. No conversation about Hamas, Hezbollah, what's going on in Syria. You can't get through any serious consideration or comment or discussion or analysis of what's going on in that region where there are open hostilities unless you get to Iran. It always includes that conversation. So you recently introduced a piece of legislation. Tell us a little bit about what it is.
Well, appreciate it. And look, you've been here in Washington. I'm sitting right outside the Financial Service Committee hearing room right now. We've got a hearing taking place with Michael Barr and Grunberger and such. And you know how this can be down here. I mean, it gets a little interesting. It can get a little chaotic. And yesterday was definitely one of those days. But there's some really serious things taking place. And and certainly the situation in Israel and in Gaza right now. And that's what this bill generated from. I mean, yesterday morning I started with my car getting broken into with crime in Washington's out of control.
Wait a sec. Tell us about that. Wait. Give me a little bit more color on your car was broken into. Where was it?
Yeah, just sitting in the same spot it is every morning in the Navy Yard, a little over about a half a mile from the Capitol. And turned out that the police actually caught them as they didn't catch them. They ran off, but as they were in the act. So they just broke two of my windows and didn't really steal much. They didn't have much time, but I did last night. I discovered that they did steal my cigars. So they did get away with that, maybe about $5 or $6. But they smashed my windows up pretty well. So it cost me about $600. But, you know, the crime in the city is awful. I mean, you wouldn't believe how many of my staffers were actually held up over the last 3 or 4 years at gunpoint.
Wow.
Literally at gunpoint. I think it was four of my staff. That's almost half. So we're going to be working on some crime bills and we've done so here in D.C. But yeah. So staffers who live around here and walk and spend a lot of time, it's just dangerous. You know, I got a daughter over at GW. I go to Washington. That concerns me. But so there's a lot going on. A lot has deteriorated, frankly, during the Biden years. It's just, I think that's an objective thing to say. And this situation. But after I got my car squared away, we then watched classified images and videos on the atrocities, the massacres, the slaughter of the Hamas terrorists on the Israeli homes and villages near Gaza. And look, if at any time anyone has any doubts who instigated this, who caused this, who needs to be annihilated because they are not human, they are inhuman, they are monsters. And this has not to do with the Palestinians. It has to do with Hamas, the terrorist group sponsored by Iran. And I will tell you this, no more than a month ago in meetings with some of the Biden administration, they were making excuses, literally making excuses for Iran and stating how they were not involved, they were not complicit. Fortunately, the Biden administration has changed their tune based upon facts and also just based upon it was completely untruthful, the comments that they were stating. So let's hope that their actions also follow in line with the fact that they've largely flipped on whether or not Iran had responsibility here with what on the attack by Hamas on Israel and on the overall terrorist situation that exists in Gaza. I mean, Iran is a state sponsor of terrorism, the number one. I don't have to tell you that they are from Hamas to Hezbollah to other proxy terrorist groups. And so my bill will freeze, even though the Biden administration said they're pausing the $6 billion that's sitting in Qatar banks on its way to Iran. My bill will freeze that permanently.
Well, Dan Muser, the congressman from Pennsylvania, congratulations on the introduction of the bill. Sorry your car got broken in. Nobody should have to deal with that. And half of your staff being held up at gunpoint? Wow. Stay with us. We have more in Fox Across America. Hey, this is Jason Chaffetz. I don't know where Jimmy comes up with his soundtracks, but hey, you know, just roll with it when you're the guest host. So Jimmy's been on a plane. He's headed to Nashville. They got the Fox Nation Patriot Awards. Really worthy of thing. Hope you're able to see it. It's on Fox Nation tomorrow night. Jimmy's a big part of that. And I'm honored that he'd let me fill in and even deal with his soundtracks that he throws out at us. So, like we said, a lot's happening on in the world, and one of my favorite people on the planet, the husband of Lee Zeldin, is with us. His wife is just the sweetheart. I just absolutely love her, but we like her husband too, Lee Zeldin, and he's joining us now on Fox Across America.
Hey, Jason, good to be with you. You know, I happen to be traveling right now, and Diana's in the back seat. I'll have to let her know you gave her a shout out on air.
Well, if I was doing this right, I'd probably just interview her and have you sit in the back. But we'll do that, set that up next time. But certainly tell her and your two amazing daughters hello. But nevertheless, we got a show that's going on here, Lee. So you used to be a member of Congress. You served in the military. You've done it all. Like you ran for governor. I just really appreciate your perspective. Now, you're a New Yorker. You know New York. I'm watching this video and I'm seeing these pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas people pounding on the doors at Grand Central Station and the cops hiding, trying to protect themselves. What is going on in New York?
Arrest them. Arrest all of them. This isn't protected First Amendment speech. These people are physically damaging property. They are physically bullying and touching others. And we saw it at Cooper Union where the Jewish students were forced to stay inside of that building. It happened a couple states over in Harvard where we saw the video of the Jewish student getting pushed around, including an editor of the Harvard Law Review. This is something that beyond holding these people accountable, arresting them for the crimes that are committed, if any of them are not U.S. citizens or permanent residents, if they're here on some visa or they're just here outright illegally, we should be working with federal authorities to get these people removed from the country. We don't want them here. There's no reason for us to allow any Hamas sympathizer who is here on a visa or here illegally to be allowed to stay. So we just have to get smarter and tougher and stop with the moral equivocation. We're seeing it right now on the college campuses with these administrators and faculty. Where I heard a Jewish student went to faculty because of feeling threatened based off of something serious that was going on campus, and the response, instead of actually getting the help that student was looking for, the faculty member told the student that they should go see a therapist. Like, this is not the right answer right now. We need courage. And this stuff really shouldn't, take any, looking through a book or asking others for guidance or help. I mean, everyone should know, if you're a leader in this moment, to be able to trust your gut and do the right thing and say the right thing, and too much equivocation out there.
Yeah, this whole concept of appeasement and, all these people that are usually out there preaching tolerance, but if you happen to be Jewish, you should be eradicated from the planet, should be just wiped off, from the sea to the river. Like, it's just unbelievable what they're going through. And shouldn't have to do that in this day and age. I just can't believe they do that. Even up at Harvard, where the president finally came out and said, anti-Semitic type of language is not acceptable, then you have 100+ Harvard professors sign a letter saying, oh, you really need to reconsider that position.
Yeah, are you kidding me? It's wild. And, this has been going on for a while. The big issue in New York, the biggest issue was at the City University of New York, where if you were graduating from the School of Law, you're going through your commencement address for 2 years in a row. We saw it again this past May. You had to sit through an anti-Semitic, hate-filled speech. And you just want to be able to enjoy a moment. There was an issue where City University of New York professors were leaving the job because the faculty student administration started to advance this, these anti-Israel resolutions, and they'd be engaged in this debate where Jewish professors who had loved their job, they'd been there a long time, they decide, this place is not for me anymore. City University of New York had a Muslim professor who had given a sermon in New Jersey one weekend where he was preaching about the Muslims wiping the Jews off of the earth. How do these people still have a job? How does the CUNY chancellor stay in that position, and these trustees? How is there not accountability? And these are taxpayer-funded universities. The tax dollars should be better leveraged to make sure that we're not sending tax dollars to places that are a bastion for this anti-Semitic hate. And I'll add one more, just using one university as an example. We're only talking about CUNY. They had a city council hearing that was set up around the schedule of the CUNY chancellor, and then the chancellor no-shows, and it was a hearing to talk about anti-Semitism on campus. So if we're seeing all this from one campus, you know, just imagine how much is going on in so many other places. And, you know, you mentioned Harvard. I referenced Cooper Union. We're seeing Columbia and NYU and Cornell. And, gosh, you know, we're just talking about the Northeast examples. You go coast to coast, and this is a real problem. And our Jewish students need leaders in government to stand up and help.
Yeah, no, it's scary. It's scary stuff out there. I want to play you a clip. This is from Governor Hochul. She's making this case that we need to collect more data through surveillance in order to keep you safe. Let's go to cut 27. I want to get your reaction to this.
We're very focused on the data we're collecting from surveillance efforts, what's being said on social media platforms. And we have launched an effort to be able to counter some of the negativity and reach out to people when we see hate speech being spoken about on online platforms. Our media analysis, our social media analysis unit, has ramped up its monitoring of sites to catch incitement to violence, direct threats to others. And all this is in response to our desire, our strong commitment, to ensure that not only do New Yorkers be safe, but they also feel safe.
What's your reaction to that, Lee Zeldin?
Hochul's thought police. You know, she's not saying that this is how she's defining speech that needs to be surveilled, the data that needs to get collected, you know, sending government to contact people who are using speech that she doesn't approve upon. How do you not define objectively what it is, the speech that you're going after? I mean, this was a slippery slope, even if you do that. I mean, how do you not define what the oversight is to make sure that this power isn't being abused? Kathy Hochul is the same person who, during last year's campaign, said that I should leave the state, and she said that others should leave the state because, you know, we're conservatives. We have positions that challenge hers, so we're not even welcome to live in New York. So are you using what's happening right now with anti-Semitism to be able to give yourself a new, broader power to be able to go after political opponents? Are you going to be going after pro-life pregnancy centers? Are you going to be going after parents who want to go to school board meetings? Like, what's the limit of how you, in your head, are vaguely defining the speech that you don't approve upon? And this is a really dangerous, slippery slope. And I don't think that anybody should be giving their benefit of the doubt. So, oh, you know, don't worry. She's not going to abuse this power. Give me a break.
No, this is really scary stuff. I mean, part of this quote, because I can see the text of it, she says, reach out to people when we see hate speech being spoken about on a landline. Now, you used to have to go get a search warrant in order to be able to listen to people on a landline. What is the state of New York doing to surveil people? Landline, mobile phones, text messages? That's far different than doing something on social media. I would argue that if you put it out on social media, everybody can look at that. You did it so that it could be out there in the atmosphere, in the world. But if you're having a private text message or having a conversation on a landline, you need a search warrant. And what she's talking about, it really does scare me.
And this is one of the problems when you have a place like New York to have one party rule covering everything, including the fourth branch of government and the media, where they're all basically just allowing this to go. You're not going to see any legislative hearings. I haven't heard the legislative leaders, the Speaker of the Assembly or the Senate Majority Leader, you know, weighing in with their great concern. I want to see, you know, the editorials in these newspapers that is holding them accountable and those in government to fear like they're actually going to lose power if they try to get away with something like this. But if they get a free pass, if you could propose something like this, and no one's going to even be asking the questions that you and I are raising right now, if no one's going to raise it in power in New York, well, you're only going to see more of the abuse. So, I mean, I'm concerned for New Yorkers. I don't care, you know, whether you voted for me or not, whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, Liberal, Moderate, Conservative. I'm speaking up. You're speaking up on behalf of everyone to make sure that, everybody's right to privacy, their protection against an abuse in power, to make sure that the accountability is there, that the limits and the checks are in place. We're speaking up on behalf of everyone right now. And, gosh, I don't care what your stripe is. I don't care who you voted for in last year's governor's race. All New Yorkers should be concerned about moves like this.
Yeah, this type of government seizing of power all in the name of, oh, it's for your own safety, is really what we should be most scared about. Even Nikki Haley, she went out there and said, hey, listen, we should have to verify everybody. You have the right to be anonymous in this country. And going back to what we were talking about before, you know, in the Constitution, there is nothing more American than petitioning your government and exercising your free speech, but to do so peacefully. That's what it says in the Constitution, not go down whatever it was, 7th Avenue, and jump up on the, you know, and pull down flags and beat the doors to try to get after the police down at Grand Central. You can protest your government, but not violently. And that's what's scary. And then for government leaders like Hochul, it's just, I care about how you voted in the last election, because New York's an important state. And, you know, for them to just be able to say, hey, we're going to monitor you on your landline. Where is the ACLU, by the way? The American Civil Liberties Union. They have morphed into a political organization. They should be jumping all over this, but I haven't heard a peep.
Listen, if I was sitting in the governor's seat today and I put something like that out yesterday, the assembly probably would start impeachment hearings by right. Monday.
Right.
Like, I mean, you're talking about the ACLU. I mean, that press release would be out. The lawsuit probably would be drafted some point this morning, be filed this afternoon before close of business. And as you talk about First Amendment, freedom of speech, and being out there protesting peacefully, if any of these Hamas sympathizers out there, the ones kicking down doors and intimidating Jews and bullying and pushing them around, if any of them don't understand what the First Amendment's about and how to protest peacefully, look at what happened yesterday in Washington, D.C. Almost 300,000 people all out there on the National Mall in front of the Capitol, and they were there peacefully. They weren't desecrating statues
right.
and streets
right.
and vandalizing. That's how you do it.
Yep. Lee Zeldin, the second best interview out of the Zeldin household we were able to get. But next time we're getting the coveted Mrs. Lee Zeldin interview coming down the road at some point. But for now, we're glad that we could at least get Lee Zeldin, one of our favorite people on the planet. Thanks for joining us on Fox Across
thanks,
America.
Thanks, Jason. Great to be with you. See ya.
Thanks, Lee. Okay, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Tackling issues of the day in an easy way.
He's all man. He's a big, strong-looking guy.
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Thaler.
There we go. There's a better song to lead the intro in. I want you to hear Jamie Raskin. This is the congressman from Maryland. He was talking to Jen Psaki on MSNBC. MSNBC, yeah. And he said he was foreshadowing what a second Trump term would look like. The mind of Jamie Raskin, Cut 11.
The role of the government, in his view, is to advance his political fortunes and destroy his political enemies. So what would a second term look like? It would look a lot like Vladimir Putin in Russia. It would look a lot like Viktor Orban in Hungary. Illiberal democracy, meaning democracy without rights or liberties or respect for the due process system, the rule of law. And in fact, there's not much democracy left to it, because their position is that they don't accept the integrity of any election where they lose. And that is a hallmark of an authoritarian party. They don't accept elections that don't go their ways.
Wow. You know, we heard all these scare tactics previously you know, Donald Trump was going to start all these wars. Did any wars start? I missed it if there was one that started. I don't think that happened under Donald Trump's administration. I heard that they're going to take away, you know, all these civil liberties. I saw freedom prevailing. I heard that the economy was going to crash and they were going to tank. And boy, the economy was good. Inflation wasn't a problem. The economy was actually soaring along the way. And then I heard that they were going to take away all these rights and change the way we vote. You know, I was, as I recall, it was Nancy Pelosi who was pushing House H.R. 1 that fundamentally changed the way we vote, who gets to vote, how they get to vote. The idea that you couldn't actually challenge election results, that they were going to change everything about how you vote. That was happening with the Democrats, not Donald Trump. The idea that you can't challenge or contest an election. Are you kidding me? You're allowed to do that. People do it on a regular basis. Now, he may not like the degree in which he's doing it, but these scare tactics from the Democrats already starting. I think you can see how scared they are that they think that Donald Trump will actually come in clean house and you know, get rid of these people who want to take up more power. That's the fundamental question. It's about freedom. It's about liberty. Whoever the Republican nominee is, whoever the Democratic nominee is, there is a fundamental difference. It is a choice election between freedom and liberty and opportunities. But don't buy into these whole scare tactics from the likes of Jamie Raskin that, oh my goodness, if it's Donald Trump, the world will collapse. How many times do we hear Russia, Russia, Russia? All of that turned out to be complete fabrication, bogus, totally, fundamentally false from top to bottom. And yet he thinks we should be scared of Donald Trump? Come on, man. Fox Across America. Thanks for joining us.
Live from Everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Well, almost Jimmy Failla. This is Jason Chaffetz. I'm filling in for Jimmy. Thrilled to do so. He's off in Tennessee. They got the big Patriot Awards happening tomorrow night. You can see it on Fox Nation. But Jimmy's been part of that in the past, and he's going to be part of it tomorrow night. It's Thursday night that that's going to happen. So I'm thrilled to be guest hosting and filling in for him. I want to give a little shout out to one of my favorite stations, KOAL, in their Castle Country Radio here in Utah. And, you know, my hometown's Utah, so I got to give a shout out to the hometown radio station, KOAL. Thanks for broadcasting us on your station. Beautiful part of the world. If you haven't been to Castle Country, you haven't seen America. So if you want to be across America, you got to go see this place. It's beautiful and it's wonderful. Thanks so much for joining us. We got a lot of great guests. There's always crazy stuff happening in the world, but right now there seems to be an exceptional amount of it. And so we're thrilled to have Chris Bedford. He's the executive editor of Common Sense Society magazine. And Chris, thanks for joining us on Fox Across America.
Great to be here, Jason.
Really do appreciate it. All right, so we're talking about a lot of different topics, but I want to talk a little bit about the election stuff, because there's this whole idea and this notion that, that you know, there might be a third party, that Joe Manchin might want to jump into this. Let's listen to Cut 7. This is Joe Manchin answering questions on CBS on the concern that he might be actually helping Trump if he ran, and I'd love to get your reaction to it. Cut 7.
If you ran on a third-party ticket, wouldn't you be helping to elect Donald Trump?
I don't buy that scenario. I've heard that, and I wouldn't buy that scenario, because if you look back in history how things have played out, I don't think they thought Ross Perot would elect Bill Clinton. Now that we see some polls with the, with Bobby Kennedy Jr., would be helping Joe Biden, because it takes votes from Donald Trump.
What do you think of that whole mess?
Yeah, I'm watching it, and I'm interested. I would love to see Joe Manchin jump in as a third-party candidate, as someone who, like Ross Perot, looked back and forth and said, you know, I'm not really digging what either one of these parties has to say. I think they're missing some of the point. But Manchin is an extremely competitive person, and not just someone who enjoys competing, but someone who likes to win. That's why he left the Senate race. That's why he's not going to take it up, because he knows that he would probably lose to the very popular governor who's trying to take his seat. And he doesn't want that. So if he was going to run, it would actually be either A, he really does think he could win, which would be very difficult in the two-party system, or two, he really is just that angry at the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party that he started with has changed so dramatically. People like West Virginians really encapsulate the kind of Democrat who's been left behind by the new party that really goes for the elite, kind of college-educated, woke class, and are completely left behind by that. If he's actually angry enough to run, then I think he would do it in the full knowledge that it would just be a strike at the center of this new Democratic Party and his hope maybe to realign it.
Yeah, this new progressive Democratic Party that we see, I think it's unrecognizable to liberals even. I mean, you used to have blue dog Democrats, right? People actually cared about the budget and the economy. They got run out of town. And now your so-called traditional liberals, well, they liked the police. They actually liked law enforcement. They were okay with our military. They would never think twice about disrespecting them. But there doesn't seem to be room for those people in today's Democratic Party.
No, it's very much become a vehicle for the elites and for the kind of Harvard professor class, the folks who want to put all their faith in the bureaucracy and kind of and are separated in a way from the folks that they're supposed to be governing. I mean, if you look at the way journalism has gone, it's kind of similar to the Democratic Party, where I look left and right, and what used to be a trade decades ago is now a place for Ivy League students to come. People who used to represent a community in their newspapers now represent the elite universities they went to. And they say that they're there to help, but they don't really have a connection. They don't really have an understanding. They don't really know those communities anymore. And that's what a lot of the National Democratic Party has become. And it's left behind a lot of people like Joe Manchin. And Donald Trump picked up a lot of those voters who were left behind and left homeless. It remains to be seen if the Republican Party can keep that going. I still think there's a real play to be made by people like Manchin to say, listen, you may not be a Trump voter. You're definitely not a Democrat voter anymore. Maybe there's a home with me.
Well, and this is accentuated, obviously, by the questions about Joe Biden and his cognitive capabilities and his ability to be, you know, fit and nimble for the most demanding job on the planet. David Axelrod, I want to play clip 10 here, cut 10. He's citing the obvious, but I want to get your reaction to this.
I have no concerns about polls a year out. I mean, you have to look at them and analyze them and adjust. But I was in a situation as a strategist for Barack Obama in 2011 where we were facing some difficult polls. The one number in the polling that was concerning, and in the CNN poll that followed after the New York Times poll, had to do with age. And that's one thing you can't reverse. And yeah, No matter how effective Joe Biden is behind the scenes, in front of the camera, what he's projecting is causing people concerns. Yeah. And that's worrisome.
Now, before you react to that, there was another interview that happened right after that on CNN on Monday with David Axelrod. He's asked a question by Casey Hunt. Then I'll get your response. Cut 9.
The president called you a word that, because we are live in London, I am not allowed to say on television, but it starts with a P and ends with K. Your response?
Yeah. Well, he wouldn't be the first, I guess, in my many years in politics. Listen, I understand he was irritated because I raised concerns that many, many Democrats had. And again, you know, my feeling is either get out or get going.
Chris, you there?
Yep, I'm here. Sorry, I cut out for a second. You know, he may want to make fun of Axelrod all he wants, but he knows that lights a candle under him a little bit, because David Axelrod is very close to a major Democratic power broker, Barack Obama, who's still meeting with a lot of the White House folks up in his mansion in Colorama, who's still very active behind the scenes in the White House. And then whenever I see David Axelrod come out and say something, especially about Barack Obama's former vice president and the current president, I know that there's got to be a wink, wink, nudge, nudge from his old boss to be going out and saying that. And while it's not public facing, when Joe Biden sitting in the White House hears Axelrod opining on what is really obvious, I think he knows that means he's losing trust. And there was an interesting article that came out in Politico magazine that was talking to a lot of the Democrats inside of his circle. And what used to be just the outliers would say, hey, what's going on with the president's age? What's going on with his mental faculties? Can he even campaign? Well, that's being talked about openly now inside the White House. They recognize that he can't campaign. They recognize he can't be on the trail taking questions. They recognize he probably wouldn't do well in a debate. They're going to try and do another, just like they did a basement campaign last round. This time they're going to try and do a Rose Garden campaign where the president talks from his position of authority and doesn't get down into the nitty-gritty of the politics. But that's a tough way to take back, to hold places like Michigan and other states that he'll need to win.
Yeah, I look at, I have said for a long time, I don't think that Joe Biden will be the nominee by the end of this calendar year. And I stand by that. I still don't, I think the, whether it be Thanksgiving or Christmas time, it's a good time to actually sit back and say, hey, you know what? I've talked to the family. I've served my country. I've been in office since 1972. So, hey, you know what? I'm just not going to be able to fulfill this anymore. And so I'm going to continue to be in office, but I'm not actually going to, I'm not actually going to be a candidate. I look at tonight's schedule. You know, he's in San Francisco. He's going to meet with President Xi. But these events are happening late in the night, and I don't know that he can get through it physically because that requires him to stay up till, you know, something like 2 o'clock in the morning, East Coast time. And I can't imagine that he can do that.
Yeah, that's difficult to be meant to have mental acuity at any age, and especially when you're showing the kind of decline he is. The Democrats would love that. They would love for him to resign around Christmas. I think a lot of his allies would like that. I think it would make sense to most people. But they kind of made a devil's bargain when they chose Joe Biden in the first place. Remember, you look back at the Democratic primary, and he was basically the only person on the stage not saying disband the police and open the borders openly. So right. They said, well, this guy is the only person who could possibly win in this country. So they threw all the support behind him in South Carolina after his campaign had been plummeting towards the earth. They pulled it out and said, no, he's our guy. He's the nominee. And they chose someone who's not on top of his game, not as good as he used to be, but it's also someone who's viciously ambitious, who has wanted to be president his entire life, who's made a number of goes at it. So while the party might say, hey, Joe, step aside, it's for the good of the party, I think he's the kind of angry guy and ambitious guy who says, no, I'm going to be a two-term president. I don't care what the party thinks.
I don't know. I tend to think that he's not going to do it. And if he does, I think that there's going to be such an opening for Republicans to reclaim that mantle. But we'll see
what
happens.
That's a worry for Democrats for sure. Yeah, I mean, who comes in then? Gavin Newsom maybe? He definitely wants it.
Yeah, I think Gavin Newsom wakes up every morning, looks in the mirror and says, good morning, Mr. President. I mean, yeah, Gretchen Whitmer. I think it exposes the idea that the Democrats have a very shallow bench. I mean, I think you had some good quality candidates on the Republican side. I can make the case for a number of them. Donald Trump is obviously lapping people at this point. On the Democratic side, who is the natural? Kamala Harris? I think that is probably the impediment as much as anything from the Democrats really saying, all right, let's pass the baton because they got Kamala Harris and she's got to be, look, she was pulling an eighth in California, her home state, when she dropped out. And then somehow she got resurrected by being the vice presidential nominee.
It was wild. And when Newsom was facing a recall, they didn't even send the California senator and the current vice president to go campaign for him because they knew she wouldn't be able to do him any good in California. Yeah, the bench is thin. I mean, there's a lot of hope in Newsom, and they're always talking about, well, what if Michelle Obama just came and saved everything for us? But I don't see that happening either. She seems to be pretty happy living the life and being the power broker that she and her husband are
exactly.
Behind the scenes. Now, I think they're in a little bit of trouble here, and they made that bet. They chose Kamala to try and check a box. They chose Biden to try and keep the party from going too radical. But now 4 years on, those choices are looking less wise.
Yeah. Chris Bedford, executive editor of Common Sense Society magazine. Really appreciate you joining us on Fox Across America. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll be right back.
It's the number one children's show in the country.
He's a lot better at radio than he is being a dad.
Oh, snap.
It's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Hey, it's Jason Chaffetz filling in for Jimmy today. We got a lot going on in the world, and I'm thrilled to have joining us on the line Congressman from Florida. You all know him, Greg Stube. He represents Florida's 17th congressional district, and he's on judiciary, he's on foreign affairs, ways and means. I don't know what you did to get so many committee assignments, but well done, and thanks for joining us on Fox Across America.
Yeah. Hey, Jason, thanks for having me. That's just ways and means and weaponization. I was on judiciary and foreign affairs.
Okay. Well, all right. You check those boxes along those way. Hey, listen, I want to get after your perspective here on Americans that are in harm's way in the Middle East that are getting shot at and bombed and everything else. I mean, we've had, 56 attacks. And I know you've been out there active on X and others talking about this, but I mean, it's crazy how much we're being attacked and how little we're doing on our response.
Yeah, 56 attacks, 59 U.S. personnel have been injured, including 27 of those service members that got TBIs, traumatic brain injury from these attacks. And Joe Biden just doesn't care. He's not responding. He's going to free up an additional $10 billion for Iran, and then that's going to be used for Shia militia groups in Iraq to continue to attack our people. You look at before Hamas attacked Israel, Biden gave the Palestinian Authority like $320 million. It's absolutely mind blowing. It's like it's like Joe Biden and the people in this administration hate America so much that they're going to give money to our enemies, and then we're going to have an open border so that terrorists can walk right in the southern border. And being a guy that served, and I served in Iraq, and having some experience there, to not be responding authoritatively and in kind to the attacks on our service members, I believe is a complete dereliction of duty for our commander in chief. You have to respond with force. It's the only thing those people understand. Terrorists don't speak a language other than aggression and force. And if you don't respond appropriately to shut down wherever these drones and artillery shells and whatever they're using to attack, if you don't shut that down decisively, they're going to continue to do what they're doing. And that's what we're seeing today.
Yeah, I believe in peace through strength. I mean, in my lifetime, we were talking about this earlier in the show, Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump, they had a cowboy-like attitude, and they weren't going to give a proportionate response. It was going to be a disproportionate response. You attack us, you hurt one hair on one head of one person, and we will take you out. And guess what? The world was a safer place.
Yeah, I've heard Trump tell the story. There's a reason why the Taliban never attacked our service members in Afghanistan while he was president. He had a phone call with him and showed him a picture of his house and said, if you touch a hair on any of our guys, this is the first place we're going to strike. And suddenly, you don't have any violence because they know it's going to be met with force. When the world sees Joe Biden's withdrawal from Afghanistan, not giving orders to a sniper who had a shot on the suicide bomber. And then you see what's happening in Ukraine, emboldening Russia to allow them to attack. We're just giving money, blank checks to Ukraine with no oversight whatsoever. We're going to give money to Hamas. We're going to free billions of dollars to the Iranians so they can attack our troops. And it's just absolutely fascinating. And then you have the White House trying to encourage Israel to pause, and they're trying to appease the Palestinians and appease the Israelis, and you can't do that when you're dealing with a terrorist organization.
I have never understood why President Obama, President Biden, have been so adamant in giving money and making sure that money flows to Iran. Like, I don't understand it, because you can't have a discussion about Hamas or the Middle East or Hezbollah without Iran. They are the world's leader in terrorism and funding terrorism. And yet somehow Obama and now Biden, all they want to do is give them more money. And as if oh, well, this money is just for bread and food, and this money is just for weapons. Right. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and that's the real lie to the American people, this push to give $100 million to the Palestinians for humanitarian aid. All you have to do is look at Gaza prior to all of this happening, where children are lining up in the streets trying to get potable water. There's zero little medical care, while the leaders of Hamas have billions of dollars. One guy is worth like $4 billion and is living in Qatar. He's not even living in Gaza. And they're taking all this money in quote-unquote humanitarian aid, and none of it's actually getting to the people that need it.
Well, that's what's sad about the whole thing. Congressman Greg Stube, one of our favorites, serving from the great state of Florida. Really do appreciate you joining us on Fox Across America. Wish we keep chatting with you. But we got more to the show, but we got to go to a commercial break. So stay with us, and we will be right back. Hey, this is Jason Chaffetz filling in for Jimmy. We got the big Fox Nation Patriot Awards happening Thursday night in Nashville, Tennessee, and Jimmy's off doing that, and so I'm thrilled to be filling in for him. And we've had lots of good guests. Well, I want to get to calls at some point. That would be great. But for right now, we're thrilled to have the Florida Attorney General, Ashley Moody. General, thanks for joining us on Fox Across America.
Hey, Jason. Great to be back with you.
Yes. You've had, like, I've guest hosts, and, like, you're usually on, and I really appreciate.
They always pair us up. I love it.
The access and the ability to ask people in important positions questions. I just think that's part of what you should do, and you always make yourself available, and we really do appreciate it.
Of course.
All right. So you're in Florida. We're certainly not going to hold you accountable for the chaos that is going on in Washington, D.C., but when you see all these different things that are going on, even in just the last 48 hours, I mean, what runs through your mind?
You know, what runs through my mind is it is becoming increasingly obvious that states are going to have to really rein in Washington and this, you know, it's like kudzu. You give them a little bit and they just take a mile and just get out of control. And so, you know, Florida's done that. We've been very fierce and pushing back on our autonomy to dictate policy and govern the way our citizens want us to govern here in Florida. And as you know, that's quite attractive to people. We're the fastest growing state in the nation. We led the nation last year in net migration. But I see what's happening in some of these blue cities and states in terms of this migrant crisis. And it is a crisis. We're seeing historic numbers. October brought in the most ever encountered at our southern border in October, even as the White House suggested that numbers were down from September, which also broke the record for the most that came over and were encountered in any month in history. I think the fact that the Democrats in these cities and states are saying, now give us money. We've declared ourselves sanctuary cities. Now give us more money. Congress, I know we ignored the law. I know that we've brought this upon ourselves, but now you've got to bail us out and pay for it, American citizens and taxpaying citizens. I think it's incredible. And I think you're going to see more and more states having to step up and fight back against that.
Yeah, there is a reason why people gravitate to, like, in the Intermountain West, you know, Utah, Idaho. They're just great places to live, and they have, like, a reasonable government in place. Places, obviously, like Florida, you know, not only do you have great weather, but you've got a good government scheme. The government actually works the way it's supposed to. And it is funny when you have people move out of California, like you said, to the Intermountain West, or maybe from the Northeast and come down to Florida and like, wait, what? You don't have to, you can make a reservation and you don't have to wait for like hours at the Department of Motor Vehicles. Little things like that add up to what's going on. But I want to talk about some specific things here. We were talking earlier to Lee Zeldin, the former congressman from New York, about Kathy Hochul and what she's trying to do to collect the data through surveillance. It just seems like such it's just so over the line. I want to play this clip again. I don't normally play clips multiple times, but It is stunning to me what she thinks would be acceptable in the state of New York. And if you listen carefully, she wants to actually monitor people's private conversation on landlines, she even says. So listen to this. We're going to play it again. Cut 27.
We're very focused on the data we're collecting from surveillance efforts, what's being said on social media platforms. And we have launched an effort to be able to counter some of the negativity and reach out to people when we see hate speech being spoken about on online platforms. Our media analysis, our social media analysis unit, has ramped up its monitoring of sites to catch incitement to violence, direct threats to others. And all this is in response to our desire, our strong commitment, to ensure that not only do New Yorkers be safe, but they also feel safe.
So what's your thought on that, Attorney General?
I think it's rightfully any citizen, you know, cringes and has a guttural reaction when they hear a government leader say, we are ramping up our data collection efforts and we have a whole unit that is collecting data on citizens. I mean, as it should, right? That's what we hear about in other nation states. Certainly that is not what you think of when you think of the United States of America, home of the free, home of limited government, which understands and respects its boundaries. Although we have seen time and time again where, you know, at the direction of certain leaders, surveillance has been misused and certainly even fabricated as if things were surveilled and facts were found when they were not. I think what is important to remember is there is the ability of law enforcement, when given information about a pending or potential crime, or let's say a terrorist act or something of that nature, to be able to use that information quickly and respond to protect American citizens. Certainly in Florida, we are working diligently to ask the public to give us information to help protect Floridians, especially in light of the internal memos from the Biden administration saying that foreign fighters, terrorist fighters may be coming in amongst the unprecedented surges at our border, and the warning from Christopher Wray that there has never been a risk like this of attacks on Americans on American soil due to what is happening. But what we don't want is just a free-for-all data collection unit. I think it's right for people to be weary of that, but yet expect law enforcement to rapidly intake information that's provided for them, and if they see a threat of a terrorist or a terrorist activity, be able to respond in quick fashion.
And look, social media is probably different than others, because if you're putting out there this speech out for everybody, yeah, there's no reason why I guess people can't look at that. But to monitor it, and my concern is that it morphs into, oh, well, it's threatening if you support Donald Trump. It's threatening if you support Ron DeSantis. And, you know, people shouldn't be subjected to that. So we're going to just shut that down. That's, you know, that's what China does. That's what Russia does. That's not who America is. And certainly counter to the First Amendment. Again, Kathy Hochul, I want to play this clip 28, because there's the monitoring and the surveillance side of the equation. But New York is, it's morphed over the years. It's not a safe place to be. I want to get your thoughts on it. Cut 28.
As I said, no one walking down the street or in a subway should feel they have to hide any indications of what their religious beliefs are. We expect to see people celebrating their lives, walking about freely, and that is no longer the case, because people are living in fear. They have a right to do whatever they want here in the state of New York.
They're living in the state of fear, Madam Governor, because you don't enforce the law. I see these people that are supposedly pro-Palestinians, but they're pounding on the glass at Grand Central Station, and the police are having to hide. You see people on, I think it was 7th Avenue, climbing up flagpoles and ripping down flags. And how does she think that the reason people are fearful is because there's a weak Law enforcement, what's your perspective, though?
Let me say, people are in fear in New York City, as well as Chicago and Portland and Los Angeles. And I could go on and on and give you examples of great cities that are now shells of themselves. They are in fear, and it is because of reckless, idiotic, not well thought out policies of Hochul and others across our cities and states in this nation, where they do not respect the rule of law. In fact, they give full free pass to certain people to violate the law repeatedly, cross the line, inflict fear, intimidation on others. And because of their lax criminal justice policies that are not based in reality or any sort of forethought, they're getting out over and over. They know that they can, you know, tear down buildings and smash windows. They know that they can hold a federal courthouse hostage. They know that they can attack a police station, because you've got leaders like her and others around this nation that say, that's okay. We should understand. They're just angry. They're justified in following and violating the law. You know, that is where they've gone wrong. In Florida, you don't see that nonsense, because we say, look, we respect people's right to express their opinions. Absolutely. We are fierce protectors of speech here in Florida. But when that crosses the line into acts of violence, criminal acts, when it moves into threatening, intimidating, insulting other people, that's where we draw the line. And you cannot have people, in the name of some idealistic feel-good initiative, sacrifice public safety and respect for the rule of law and think that people aren't going to be in fear. And exactly. You know what? It's come home to roost. Like, they are facing the results of their decisions for the last however many years. And Florida shows it doesn't have to be like that. You elect leaders that understand the consequences of decisions and policies. They respect fiercely individual rights, but they will enforce the rule of law. And Florida has shown that you can do both.
And very quickly, I have less than a minute to go here. So, you know, you hear these sanctuary cities and sanctuary states now complaining, oh, it's going to take hundreds of billions of dollars to support all these people. And yet they were the ones that invited them in.
Absolutely. Again, and hey, watch this. Mark my words. They are going to use this immigration crisis, state of emergency that they're declaring everywhere. And it is a crisis, just like they did COVID. They're going to ignore the law. They're going to spend recklessly. They're going to move us more from the land of opportunity to the land of handouts, all in the name of emergency and a crisis, because in their words, they will never let a crisis go to waste. So watch, mark my words. They are going to use this to get billions of dollars and ignore federal law, ignore what Congress has placed in terms of priorities for immigration. And it's going to be a disaster for our country.
Sadly, I think you're right. I think that's exactly what they're going to do. I thought it was also interesting. They came out and they said, well, you know, the reason that rents are so high and the demand on housing is so high is because we're short like 2 million homes in this house. And I'm thinking, well, how many people did you let into this country illegally? Oh, isn't that a coincidence? I mean, it's no coincidence. They're totally tied together. Ashley Moody, Florida Attorney General, thanks for joining us on Fox Across America. We really do appreciate it.
Of course, Jason. Great to be with you.
Thank you. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
A show with substance and style.
This is my oldest guy in the boy band look.
It's Fox Across America with Jimmy Fallon.
He's a good-looking Italian.
Hey, this is Jason Chaffetz filling in for Jimmy, and I don't know if you saw the segment last night on Jesse Waters, Primetime. He had this great story. It was about the Secret Service. Now, I can tell you, I know a lot about the Secret Service, okay? When I was chairman of the Oversight Committee, I used to be in Congress once upon a time, but I did a deep dive and really investigated a lot of things that were problematic at the Secret Service. They hadn't had oversight in years, and it showed, and a lot of problems. We had to go through two different directors in order to get the right Secret Service director in place. But now they're showing there's some problems. And this whole idea of the cocaine situation that they found at the White House. Now, remember, it was a suspicious substance. And then 10 days afterwards, they said, oh, we can't find the perpetrator. Jesse did a good job. They issued a Freedom of Information Act request. They went and looked at it. Heritage has been looking out, of which I've been associated with. But let's play clip 32. This is a real problem.
We asked the Secret Service for an explanation, and they said, oh, it's secondary DNA. But the initial Secret Service report clearly said there was no DNA found, and there is no physical evidence. But the documents show they're keeping a DNA sample in an evidence locker. Is this so Biden's dog bites another agent, they have something? We don't know. And the Secret Service told Primetime they may end up destroying the DNA evidence at some point down the road. You know, protocol. Primetime asked the Secret Service, why didn't you take DNA samples from your suspect list? They said they would have needed a court order. This tells me two things. The Secret Service didn't want to crack the case, or the Secret Service knew the coke was found in the library and put it in a cubby and closed the case.
And that's the concern. You know, initially the report was that this suspicious substance, which they now claim ended up being cocaine, was in the library. Now, the library is not open to the general staff. It's not open to the public. It's in close proximity of the residents and some of the executive staff that works with the president. That's the library. That was the initial report. Then it morphed to the West Wing entrance. Now, I've been in the West Wing entrance many times. Highly guarded, a lot of surveillance going on there. When you walk in the door, there are two parts of the Secret Service. There is the Secret Service, then there's the uniform division. And so supposedly it was over there. That's in close proximity to the Situation Room, the National Security Advisor, the Vice President, and the Chief of Staff. That's where that is. But then the story morphed again, and it was, oh no, it's the entrance by these cubicles that are over in the old executive office building. So you'd have to walk out of the West Wing of the White House, go across the street, and then go to that entrance. That's suddenly where it was found. And that's where they released these pictures. Now, as Jesse pointed out on his show, they talked about this substance being on the floor. But the pictures they took and they showed were in a cubicle, in a cubby. You know how you go and you lock in your phone or something like that? It begs more questions. And why and how in the world would Homeland Security, which is the agency in which the Secret Service flows through to, why would they close a case, what was it, 10, 11 days into it, said, oh, we can't find, we give up. They didn't think that they had, at least they told the public, they didn't think they had DNA, that was not plausible. But now through the Freedom of Information Act, there is DNA. So you have a changing location, you have some audio tapes, but again, I think this is highly suspicious. I don't think they want to give this up, but they should be giving it up. And we've had trouble after trouble after trouble with the Secret Service being honest with the American people. Remember we had the fence jumper years ago, the guy jumping the Crocs, and he didn't get into the White House. Well, he did get into the White House. Oh, whoops, well, we didn't tell you that accurately. They seem to think that they can morph their story into whatever they want in order to snooker the public. That's not how this works, America. They work for us. We don't work for them. And even if you're the Secret Service, you still got to come clean on some of these investigations. You are law enforcement. You are supposed to enforce the law, but they don't. Carol Lenig at the Washington Post has written extensively about this. I've investigated it, and I'm telling you what Jesse was talking about last night on Primetime. Hope he stays on it because they are not coming clean. That's what we deserve in America. I'm Jason Chaffetz filling in for Jimmy. This is Fox Across America.
Live from everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Almost Jimmy Failla. This is Jason Chaffetz. I'm filling in for Jimmy. big Fox Nation, the Patriot Awards, happening Thursday night in Nashville. He had to get on a plane from New York, get over to Nashville. That's happening today during the show. So I'm filling in. Glad you're going to spend a little bit of time with us. We want to get right after it because there's so much craziness going on in the world. And we're really pleased to have Russell Fry, the congressman from South Carolina's 7th Congressional District. He's joining us on Fox Across America. Beautiful part of the world, Congressman. Thanks for joining us.
It is indeed. It's always good. You know, you go home and you see that beach flying in, and it's just good. It's always good to be home. And I see my 6-year-old son. It makes it even better.
Now, there you go. It's, you know, the beaches of South Carolina are about as beautiful as it gets. So, but thanks for your service. Thanks for being there. You've been there a little while now. Not too long, but a little while. I served in Congress 8+ years, but the craziness that happened in the last 24 hours is a little out of control.
Well, I mean, this place is, I think we say, like, historic a lot. I'm a little tired of using the phrase for everything that we do up here this year. I think the American people expect us to work, and we need to do it.
But Congress is going on a 2-week recess. So, you know, look, I know when you go back to your district, you are doing work. You spend time with your constituents, and it's not as if you're going on vacation, and Thanksgiving is next week, but nobody's going to accuse Congress of working too hard, are they?
certainly not this year, not what I'm seeing. I think that was, the message that people overwhelmingly that I hear from really everywhere is that there are some glaring issues, really big issues that we need to tackle. And if it takes us being up here to do it, let's do it.
We have a big meeting happening today. The President of the United States will be meeting with President Xi in California. There are meetings, and then there are some things that really matter. Now, previously on the show, we aired a clip of what John Kirby thinks the objectives of the meeting are with Joe Biden. And let me just read them really quick. Well, let's just play the clip. Clip two.
He'll be focusing really on three things. One, not only improve and increase American investment in the region, but the region's investment in the United States. Number two, lifting up and looking towards a vision for better international worker standards, cleaner environments, safer environments, collective bargaining, chance for international workers to be able to compete on a level playing field. And number three, building a more inclusive economy across the region.
Okay, so the three objectives for Biden, according to his spokesperson, is spend more money in China, collective bargaining for workers, and number three, build a more inclusive economy, whatever the crap that means. Well, is this what the President of the United States should be focused on with President Xi?
No, my gosh. I mean, you know, it reminds me, it's so tone deaf, Jason. It reminds me of, you know, last week or the week before when we have all the Hamas attacks going on in Israel and they want to talk about Islamophobia. The same thing applies here. I mean, China, how about the spy balloon that was over my district? How about the growing threats that they pose to our military in chastising them and kind of getting the planes close, or the saber battling that's going on with Taiwan? How about the continued isolation of democracies around the world by China, or the things that they do with their economy? They manipulate their currency, or they steal our intellectual property. None of those made this list. Like, that's just wild to me. But again, I think it goes to the tone deafness of the president.
Let's listen to John Ratcliffe. He used to serve in Congress. He was on the Ingram angle last night. He was also the former director of national intelligence, the highest on the food chain on intelligence. Let's listen to him in clip four.
This joint venture is one where one partner has robbed the other one blind. What our intelligence and the facts tell us is that a rising China has been built on the intellectual property theft and economic and military espionage in the trillions of dollars over the years. And, this just really underscores that Joe Biden and this administration has been soft on China, just as they've been soft everywhere with all of our adversaries, Iran and Russia. China's advanced around the globe. Their positions have improved since Joe Biden has been president. And it's why China will be working to influence and interfere the election in 2024. They want Joe Biden to continue to be a weak U.S. president.
What's your thought on that?
I think you just hit the nail on the head. I mean, you look at where we are, and this is a concern that I've had on judiciary and oversight for a while, is with all these foreign transactions that have taken place with the Biden family, what were they really selling? What was going on? And how compromised are you? And I think that's just a concern that Americans have is when they look at this president, this administration. I think John is exactly right. There's a lot of, you know, if the president of China is coming to the United States, we need to talk about the real issues that we face and not kind of some made up blueprint of, a Green New Deal on the world stage. It's remarkable to me how unable or unwilling they are to really talk about and deal with the tough issues as it relates to China.
China is one thing, you know, and then the other part of the world that's really on fire right now is obviously Israel and what's going on there. A lot of the Democrats are rallying behind this idea that they need this so-called ceasefire. This is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, clip 22, on what she would like to see.
Ceasefire means there is no military solution, only a diplomatic and cultural solution. A relational solution, a reckoning with ourselves and our history. That is what ceasefire now means. Ceasefire means there is no military.
So what's your thought on what she's advocating for? She's not the only one. There's others out there that want to see, Israel, you lost 1,400 people in the worst terrorist attack. So why don't you just lay down your arms and continue to take the pounding?
Right. I mean, could you imagine somebody doing that to us after 9/11? I mean, you think about if the roles were reversed and this happened to us, and then you have people like AOC saying ceasefire now, but only after, you know, we have terrorized your country, killed 1,400 people, hold a couple hundred hostages, but ceasefire now. Like that, it just makes no sense. And this is the problem, I think, Jason, with the Democratic Party right now. I mean, today we had a vote on the floor on an amendment that would have stripped funding from colleges that engage in these anti-Semitic protests. 55 Democrats, somewhere in that range, voted against the resolution. I mean, they are, you know, the Republicans are pretty united in standing with Israel, but even something so simple as, you know, harassing Jewish students and blocking them in a library and not letting them leave, we're not going to defund the colleges that do and engage in that or give a wink and a nod to it. I think it's reprehensible, but that's kind of where the Democratic Party is. Terrorists don't, you know, to the point, terrorists don't get ceasefires. You know, ceasefires don't happen just because AOC demands it. Hamas is still going to do what Hamas does, and it's going to be funded by Iran, and they're still going to engage in it. They're not going to abide by any ceasefire. I mean, it's in part of their charter that they want them off the map.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you travel to the region, I've been to the region many times, and it's interesting if you go and try to find or buy a map. A lot of these countries, it doesn't even have Israel on the map. It just pretends right. that it's not even in existence. There was a big rally, obviously, on the mall, close proximity. Did you have a chance to go to that? Did you participate in it or go to that rally?
I did, and it was incredible. I'm glad that I went. It was kind of a busy day up here yesterday, but we carved out time to go stand out there and just to see, one, this sheer amount of people, and 200,000-300,000 people, whatever it was, out there kind of in solidarity. And, you know, they had, Jason, they had an area for members of Congress, as you know, that they do that if we go. But I spent some time walking around through the crowd and met, you know, members of the public, people that were from the British Parliament, the Canadian Parliament, the Israeli Knesset were there, Belgium. I mean, you really had a lot of people from around the world, leaders from around the world there in solidarity with Israel. And I thought that was the neatest moment of the rally, just the amount of people who stood together. I mean, we always see on the news, you know, very vocal and angry minority, you know, yelling about ceasefires or whatever. But it was really neat. And I think it really showed the best of who we are as a country that, despite the noise, most Americans support Israel.
Yeah, and so much disinformation comes out. I did appreciate Chuck Schumer and the minority leader in the House joining in a bipartisan way to voice their strength in support of Israel. I thought that was well. But the misinformation that comes out, I want to play cut 20. This is BBC News. They issued an apology, because they had to, for claiming that medical teams were being targeted by the Israelis. Listen to this.
Now an apology from the BBC. BBC News, as it covered initial reports that Israeli forces has entered Gaza's main hospital. We said that medical teams and Arab speakers were being targeted. This was incorrect and misquoted a Reuters report. We should have said IDF forces included medical teams and Arabic speakers for this operation. So we apologise for this error, which fell below our usual editorial standards. The correct version of events was broadcast minutes later.
I mean, these mistakes always seem to go one direction. I've only got 30 seconds. Your reaction to that?
Well, I'm surprised that the mainstream media admitted anything. I mean, you know this as well as I do. They don't ever do that. They're happy to editorialize constantly, even if it's perpetuating falsehoods and you know, untruths. So I pass off to the release acknowledging it, but we need more of that, quite frankly.
Congressman Russell Fry from the great state of South Carolina, thanks for joining us on Fox Across America. We do appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
The show that's not afraid to hit the road.
The stars at night are big and bright.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
This is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Time to get after it. We're glad that we've got Senator Marsha Blackburn, who's joined us from the great state of Tennessee. Senator, thanks for joining us on Fox Across America.
I'm so happy to join you. Thank you.
Always good to chat with you on so many fronts, but we got a big meeting here happening between the President of the United States and President Xi. And I played this a couple times, and you know what? I'm going to play it again, because the more I listen to it, the more frustrated, whipped up I get about it. This is John Kirby on Air Force One. What are the goals of what President Biden is doing meeting with President Xi? Play clip two, please.
He'll be focusing really on three things. One, not only improve and increase American investment in the region, but the region's investment in the United States. Number two, lifting up and looking towards a vision for better international worker standards, cleaner environments, safer environments, collective bargaining, chance for international workers to be able to compete on a level playing field. And number three, building a more inclusive economy across the region.
Senator, I'm stunned that this is the goal. America spend more money in China. Number two, better worker standards for, you know, collective bargaining for the Chinese. And number three, a more inclusive economy, whatever the heck that means. That's the goal? That's what the president's trying to accomplish?
I tell you what, you just can't make it up. And every day there is some new twist to some new something that they are up to. Now, if their goal with China is just to go big and try to say, let's talk about the economy, and then to want to talk about climate change and workers' rights and unions, unionizing Chinese workers, and having an inclusive economy, which that is code word for let the government take your money and redistribute it so that everybody's got the same. Here is what I think that the president ought to say. Number one, Xi Jinping should not be welcome to the United States. The red carpet ought not to be rolled out for him. And number two, Xi Jinping will not get a meeting with the President of the United States until they come clean about COVID, until they will come clean about the spy balloon, until they agree to stop shipping fentanyl into Mexico and thereby, with the cartels, bringing it into the United States. And number four, until they shut down all of the soft propaganda that is hitting our kids, whether it's these Confucius Institutes on college campuses or TikTok and the surveillance and the garbage that they are putting out on TikTok. Now, then if he does all of that and makes those admissions, then he can have an audience with the President of the United States. And on that agenda, when it comes to economics, the top of the list should be, hey, Xi Jinping, we've got about a $1 trillion trade imbalance with you guys. So when are you going to make good on the ag quotas that you set under President Trump? When are you going to meet these quotas? So he should be held to account for that. If he wants to talk about climate change, ask them why they are continuing to buy coal from the United States of America and why you can't see the sky in Beijing on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, because the plants are running. And if you want to talk about an economy that is going to help everyone, freedom, free people, and free markets, that's how you do it. So I would just have a totally different agenda.
Well, the meeting has just begun. They've only been meeting for a couple minutes. And, yeah, three seats down from President Biden to the right is the former Senator John Kerry. So you know that they're talking climate change.
Well, they probably are talking climate change. What a waste. And what disrespect for hardworking American taxpayers that are out here that are suffering under Bidenomics. You know, in Tennessee, the average family in Tennessee is spending an additional $862 per month in order to just tread water and be where they were. When you look at the increase in the price of groceries, they're up over 20%. And that is hitting people in their pocketbooks. You look at what it costs to heat and cool your home, about 40% more. To fill up the gas tank, you know, 30 to 40% more. And these are the issues that are affecting people. That cost of living is at the top of the list.
Well, Senator, I wish we had more time with you, and I wish you could call more of these shots, but we don't. Because we got to go to a commercial break. You're always so generous with your time and really, really appreciate your perspective. Good work that you do on so many issues there in the United States Senate. Senator Marsha Blackburn from the great state of Tennessee. Thanks for joining us on Fox Across America.
Got it. Bye-bye.
Again, thanks. Stay with us. We got more to come on Fox Across America. Hey, it's Jason Chaffetz. I'm filling in for Jimmy. Jimmy's getting ready for the big Patriot Awards happening Fox Nation Thursday night. You know, you got all kinds of awards for Hollywood celebrities and all this. But man, these when real people do incredible things, like average people doing extraordinary things and stepping up and making the country better and doing patriotic things, I'm glad Fox and Fox Nation are you know, honoring those people. They need more of that. So I hope you're able to see it. It's tomorrow night. Jimmy's going to be involved and engaged in that. Fox Nation Thursday night. It's going to be a great event. But it gave me an opportunity to fill in for Jimmy. So I'm very honored that they would ask me to do so. And really excited to have this next guest because I know personally, because I worked with him, that he's one of the hardest working members there in the United States Congress. We're happy to have Andy Biggs, the congressman from Arizona.
Jason, who would have thought we would have to get Jimmy out of town for you and I to get to talk together on the radio? I mean, who would have thunk it?
I mean, I keep telling Jimmy, you looking tired, brother. Let's go take a vacation, you know, because then I can, you know, fill in. But it's always good to chat with you. And you're not one to mince words. You're also not one to really be intimidated or back down. So I want to talk to you about a variety of different things, but I got to tell you, Congress over the last, whatever it is, 36 hours or so, pretty interesting place to be, pretty raucous.
Yeah, I mean, I'm mad at Bernie Sanders because he could have had a cage fight going on in his Senate committee yesterday. But he, you know, to his, I guess to his credit or his blame, he was able to keep things in reasonable order after they had started to walk down a fisticuffs right there in the Senate.
Jason, well,
have you ever seen that?
No, but I've seen Mark Wayne Mullen in the House gym, and he really does practice wrestling and MMA fighting on a regular basis. I mean, that's kind of who he is.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I think he was a professional cage fighter at some point.
No, and I think it goes to a bigger, broader issue. I mean, the guy from the union was trolling him. I mean, he was really trolling him online. And you know, you hate to see it kind of devolve into those types of things. But, you know, I had no idea it would be so exciting in Congress. So I would have stayed. I'm missing out on this.
You are missing it, Jason. That's for sure.
All right. Let's transition here a little bit and talk about Arizona. Arizona's pivotal in the next election. You've got Kristen Sinema, who left the Democratic Party. She's going to try to run for reelection. Arizona on any electoral map, it's desirable. But, you know, it does strike me that Democrats have long just assumed that the Hispanic vote would be theirs. And I want you to listen to this and then give me your perspective, being the, you know, a congressman from Arizona. This is CNN interviewing Latino voters who were unhappy with Joe Biden. Cut 12.
Are you happy with your vote for Joe Biden?
I didn't see something like really change, like, and I didn't see changes in, so I was expecting something.
Gabriele Martinez was expecting better. Both she and her husband work. They have one child, 6-year-old Roman. Every month, a struggle.
Right now, I work in 3 jobs because I have to, like, pay more things. Like, my house is more expensive.
Dalton, Georgia bills itself the carpet capital of the world. Much of the labor here, Latino immigrants living paycheck to paycheck. Many now view the Trump years as better for their bottom line.
Some Latino communities say when Trump was a president, we don't have high gas or inflation of the food.
Right.
So this is the truth.
Pocketbook concerns, top of the mind, and the support of this fast-growing voting bloc critical in key battleground states.
And I don't think that's just Hispanics. I think that's across the country and probably all demographics and all. But what's your perspective, Congressman?
Well, I think this goes back to Bill Clinton's first commandment, which is that it's the economy stupid, because the bottom line, Arizona, and you know this, Jason, because you're familiar with Arizona. Arizona had and still has some of the highest gas costs in the country per gallon basis, and that impacts everything because everything's trucked. And in Arizona, everybody's driving a car. Everybody has to pay for gas because that's the way you get around, and it's really takes a bite out of your pocketbook. And right now, keeping up with inflation and the cost of energy growth is basically an impossibility because nobody's getting that many raises and that much increase in their salary. So the squeeze is on. People feel it. And they know Americans are not dumb. They understand pretty clearly that it's the policies of this administration which is causing their economic squeeze. And I would just add this one last point. When you feel economically squeezed and tight, you feel less free than when you can make ends meet comfortably or regularly without having to sweat about it. And I think people feel less free under Joe Biden.
I think that's right. I think the metrics point to that. It's not just some Republican talking point or, you know, hey, we're trying to make a case here. There is no metric that says that the economy is really moving in the right direction. You look at the overall credit card debt, look at the inflation rate. It's always fascinating to me. Inflation goes zooming up and then it comes down. They say, oh, it's going down, but it's still ahead of where the goals are for the Fed, still ahead of where it was for Donald Trump, and still miles ahead of where it was for Donald Trump when he started. Something like more than 17%. Life is more expensive under Joe Biden than it was on Donald Trump's watch.
Yeah, and that's right. And don't forget that's even with the Fed taking out certain metrics from their inflation calculator. So they've taken out food, they've taken out gas, they've taken out all kinds of things, which when you throw them back in, it gives the more accurate cost of inflation, and it's double, well into the double digits, and it's been going on for quite some time. And I don't think we have that short-term memory that we can't remember when inflation first started, this administration, Janet Yellen first coming out and saying, there's not inflation. Then, yeah, there's inflation, but it's transitory. Inflation, the third thing was that inflation is actually good for the economy. Fourth thing is, well, now we got inflation, and it looks like it's long-term.
Yeah, it was good for you. Yes.
Yes, exactly.
But it was a choice that the Democrats made, and they made it on day one when they decided to dismantle the energy infrastructure in this country. And when they did so, they just said everything's going to be more expensive, because if you don't have a national energy program that makes you self-sufficient, you cannot achieve things and make your products more profitable and more affordable to the public at large. They just systematically said, okay, we're going to get rid of the gas and oil. And so guess what? Everything with gas and oil is going to go up. But to your point, particularly in a place like Arizona, everything is trucked. The trucks are just, and they got to fuel up with gas. You could not in the next couple decades put an electronic infrastructure in place to support the trucking industry and be able to operate coast to coast in this country.
No, and the prices are going to continue to go up. So we have two reasons that prices are going up. First, we got the energy, right? That's just a scarcity of oil and gas, and that's going to drive cost up, and then everything's trucked. So we're all dependent on that energy. The second thing is the federal government keeps devaluing our currency by spending more and more and more, so that now we're approaching $1 trillion in national debt service. In other words, our interest costs on our national debts are approaching $1 trillion. And why is that? Because the Fed is trying to bring inflation under control, so they keep raising interest rates. And so you have that pressure. And when rates go up, even the federal government's got to pay more. So it is really this vicious cycle that's going on right now. And there are two ways we can combat it. The easiest way would be to say, let's drill, baby, drill. We're going to allow for exploration, development, and extraction, as well as refining of oil and gas. And then we're also and then the second thing is we're going to start reducing and put together a viable, legitimate plan to bend the trajectory down on federal spending, so we can move towards one day, maybe in the distant future, but at least someday, trying to get this back to a balanced budget. And right now, neither one of those has a chance right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think that's just the facts. And that's the reality. So going back to the Arizona politics of everything, you know, there is a thought that maybe there would be a third party candidate. I want to play this clip from Joe Manchin. It's cut 8. And many think that he's perhaps preparing to run as a third party candidate for president. Clip 8.
Are you concerned then if next year's presidential election is Donald Trump versus Joe Biden?
Very concerned. Sure.
Why?
It'd be detrimental for a person who I tried to work with as president.
Donald Trump.
Right. And I couldn't get there with Donald Trump. But to basically this visceral hatred and degradation of human beings and talking about people that make up America. You know, you can't be a person that believes the only fair election is the one you win. You can't be a person who believes that the only laws pertain to everybody but me. There's no privilege like that in America.
What's your take on that?
I think that's a pretty facile way of looking at it on the part of Manchin. And the question with regard to how does that play in Arizona, I'll just be frank. It's impossible to say right now. Trump is up over Biden by, I think it's 6 points in Arizona, by in several polls, including from kind of the other side of the aisle, not Trump's side of the aisle. So it's pretty consistent. But you have this strange dynamic going on. So you have, and it's reflected in the Senate race, where you have Kyrsten Sinema running as a re-election as an independent. Ruben Gallego, who served in the House with you and I, who's a Democrat, running as a Democrat. And then you have Carrie Lake running as a Republican. And then other, you know, there's others in every race, but those would probably be the three front runners right now. And I think they would be reflective. Who knows where coattails come in Arizona? And quite frankly, my position has been, it's very difficult to say what the outcome in Arizona would be, top to bottom right now.
I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, that's one of the good concerns. And Arizonans kind of have this independent streak, right? It's just kind of innate. It's just sort of part of the history and the culture of Arizona. So it is a critical state. It'll be fascinating to see how that vote goes and where it goes and how it goes. But Congressman Andy Biggs, thank you so, so much for joining us on Fox Across America. Really, truly do appreciate it.
You bet. Let's do it again, Jason.
Thank you. Thank you. If I don't talk to you, have a happy Thanksgiving. It's coming up, hard to believe, next week. So stay with us. We'll be right back on Fox Across America.
It's the show that 9 out of 10 listeners voted the best host on radio.
I don't want to say that they were dumb, but they were dumb.
Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Anytime you put on an event, by definition, you know, you have people over your house, you're going to clean up the house. You're going to make sure the kids, you know, make their beds, you know, take the socks, you know, put them in the drawer, in the hamper. And that's, you know, you have 21 world leaders, you've got tens of thousands of people coming from all around the globe. What an opportunity to showcase the world's most extraordinary place, San Francisco. This is a crown jewel. I was just with President Xi. First thing he talked about was San Francisco.
That's Governor Newsom justifying the idea that he went down the streets of where the motorcades would go and cleared out the homeless, you know, swept the streets, made it all nice and pristine, and tried to equate it to, you know, you got somebody coming over to your house, of course you're going to make it nice. But the chaos is going to return as soon as they leave. And the poor residents and business owners, of course, are going to go back to having to deal with the fact that that is one of the dirtiest, most disgusting, crime-ridden cities in this country. And it was a crown jewel until they decided to just let this run amok, that law enforcement was not a good thing, that they didn't know how to deal with this. You know, when Gavin Newsom first ran for mayor, there's a great video out there. He was running for mayor and he said, oh, I've got this plan to eradicate homelessness. It's gotten exponentially worse. And yet he gets elected not only for as mayor, but now he's the governor of California and the place gets worse, not better. And so what happens? President Xi, President Biden coming to town. Oh, we're going to make it look nice. But it's a facade. It's a lie. And it shouldn't happen to the good people who live. I was born in Northern California. I lived there in the Bay Area only until I was about 7 years old. That place is disgusting now. They lost the culture. They lost the atmosphere. You could walk down the streets back then. You could go out and enjoy yourself, but not anymore. It is a cesspool, and it doesn't need to be that way. But they chose to make it that way. And that's what's a shame, is that they don't prioritize the people. They prioritize the government elites, including the president of China, because he's trying. That's what China would do. You know, I went to China several times as a member of Congress, a few times, I should say, not several, but, and I would go there. Oh my gosh, that thing was so scripted. You couldn't go down certain streets. They had to make sure everything was just in order and just the right way, because they wanted to make it look like China was superior. And what I see Gavin Newsom doing is absolutely, it's just absurd, and it's sad, and it doesn't need to be that way. Listen, there's a lot happening in the world. The United States of America is still the greatest country on the face of the planet. We just got done celebrating and recognizing Veterans Day. To all the men and women who have served this country and currently serve in this country to protect the United States of America and make it the greatest country on the face of the planet, hats off to you. We don't do enough. We shouldn't do it just on Veterans Day or the 4th of July or, you know, whatever day it might be. This is something that should be going on in perpetuity. You see somebody in uniform, you help them out. I'm glad to see airlines letting members of, you know, active duty military get on the plane first. Things like that, I think, are good for America and for our patriotism. The last thing I want to mention is I do believe that this next election, this next 24 or 12 months, is going to be about safety and security. It's going to be about safety in your wallets, safety on the border, safety and security globally, crime, inflation. Do you have economic security? It's all about safety. That's what I think is going to happen. I think that's what America is concerned about. Those are the areas in which we're going to focus on as a nation. A bit an honor and a privilege to actually fill in for Jimmy Failia. Again, Fox Nation, Thursday night from Nashville, Tennessee, the Patriot Awards. Talking about people, ordinary Americans doing extraordinary things. Also want to give out a plug to Jason in the House. This is a Fox News podcast. I hope you're able to listen to it. We have great guests. We get behind the scenes, like how did they become who they become? So go to type in Jason in the House, just Jason in the House. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, I'd be honored if you listen to it. We got great, exciting, fun guests that come up on that. Thanks for listening to Fox News Radio, and appreciate Jimmy for a lot of different reasons, but for allowing me to sit in his seat. This has been Fox Across America.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.